The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
So this is pretty nice. Just the family tonight. Of course, when I see this small group, my first thought is, well, yeah, it's because I'm giving the talk. Then I realize, but there's no schedule. No one could know. Yeah, funny how we do that. So we continue with examining and practicing and taking in the Lojong teachings with their 7 points and 59 slogans as particularly as they've been presented to a Zen audience or filtered through a Zen sensibility by Norman Fisher in his book, Training and Compassion. And we are on point five, assess and extend. And we've heard about there's only one point and trust your own eyes. And there are two others in this section in point five, and one is maintain joy and don't lose your sense of humor. And the other is practice when you're distracted, number 22. And I thought I was going to talk about number 21, but it was just going in all kinds of directions that I wasn't happy with. So how could I maintain joy if I wasn't happy with my talk about joy? That wasn't just kind of, you know, even more than a Zen paradox. It just wasn't going to go. And so I thought, okay, well, why didn't I go for practice when distracted in the first place? Well, maybe that's because that's the one that's cutting closer to the bone right now. We're well into this retreat. And some of us are tired. And it's pretty easy to get distracted. And I have what I consider, of course, I think I have this high visibility job. I think everybody's looking at me because I'm the shuso. And probably Esther thinks everyone's looking at her because she's the cheeky. And probably Jenny thinks everyone's looking at her because they're hungry. And probably Ray thinks everybody's looking at him because I'm not doing something I'm supposed to do. And so wait, what's wrong with Ray? He's supposed to step up. But I think that everyone's looking at me. And I want to not make mistakes. And I could tell you a lot of stuff about the shuso job and why it's so hard. But, you know, everybody's job here is hard. It's hard just coming here and sitting. We all have that story. Maybe it's better to just come clean and say, you know, I keep dropping the ball. And more than you know, some of you, because I've got these wonderful bodhisattvas that are inhabiting the forms of our teachers and our assistant shuso and our tenzo and our various jikis, and they keep covering for me, as bodhisattvas will. Their great compassion rises up when I suddenly look like the famous deer in the headlights. Or just like, you know, where is he? Where is he now? He must be distracted. I guess the shuso's distracted. So I'll step in. So thank you. And then it becomes my practice to go, oh no. All right. You're not supposed to beat up on yourself. But come on. There have been a lot of these today. And you know, I really want... I really want to be perfect at this. And I say that knowing nobody can. None of us does our jobs perfectly. And when you guys have your little slips... I think it's so charming. Like, wow, a human being. great, no wooden puppet Buddha here. You know, and when I make my mistakes, I just think, oh yeah, I want to be perfect. I want to be the Shuso. Well, when Alan was Shuso, I want to be that guy. And I can't. Because I keep getting distracted. You know, a lot of stuff going on in this mind of mine. And it is not all coming and going, Sasheen. So, I really want to be perfect so people will like me. Maybe if I do everything right, you know, then wow, I'm human too. Because I think we all go through this. You know, we go through life, and maybe this is, you know, I've read in books about Zen that Japanese teachers, when they first came here, they were like, what's with these Americans? Why are they so full of self-loathing, and why do they think they're worthless? And maybe that's true. Maybe it's kind of a cultural thing. I don't know. I've read that. I don't know if it's true because I'm not Japanese, and I've never spent time in Japan. So maybe there are plenty of people in Japan that struggle with this too. Maybe it just is more obvious in us, or we don't hide it so well. I hid it for a long time. Even from me. Not good though. Because you keep these things hidden, and you know, you can't work on them. And you start to get a little bit like that wooden Buddha. Even if outside you're a genial, you know, witty, obviously I'm talking about myself, charming guy, but you know, inside you're dying. You got the stone Buddha thing going. Except it's not really that. It's just this feeling of stoniness. So what do we do then? We want so much to be perfect and we get distracted. And, you know, here we are. We committed to this. And the time is precious. And we will all die. And here we are on the cushion thinking about what, you know? And then the slogan comes, you know, practice even when distracted. And practice when you're distracted. I'm going to say practice because you're distracted. Practice with being distracted. It turns out that we human beings, this may not shock you, seems to be true of all human beings. It's not cultural that we seem to be prone to distraction. And there's been some neuroscientific work, and everybody disagrees about it. This is not clear cut. It's pretty nebulous right now. There are different theories, and I won't go too much into it. I've got tomorrow to go into lecture mode when I go back to BC. Tempting as it is, because that's my comfort zone. But it turns out that when researchers were looking at people's brains when they were in fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging scanners, in the resting state, they were going to do some task later. They didn't even know necessarily what it was yet. Right now, they're just resting. They're just lying there with a blank screen or something. And so they wanted a baseline against which to measure whatever lit up in the brain, as we say, when they did the task, whatever it was, so they could see what the difference was. And they thought, so yeah, so we'll find these lower levels of activation, and then the task starts, and the global levels of activation will go up, and we'll see where they went up. But guess what? The levels of activation didn't go up. They were just about the same. The brain, when it's supposedly resting, the brain was doing all this stuff. But it was just showing up in different places than when the brain was oriented to whatever task. And so those places where the brain had been active had to be kind of tamped down so that a little neural energy, that's a technical term. No, I'm making that up. So that attention could be, or whatever, you know, and even blood flow could be redirected to the task-oriented parts of the brain. So then they were like, wow, what's going on with these people? What lit up? And they already knew a lot of stuff about the areas that were active when the test subjects were at rest. And there were areas associated with memory, with that is autobiographical memory, what's called episodic memory, remembering things that happened in the past and sometimes with vivid details. The time I was, you know, on the beach and a dog bit me, that kind of memory. So memories, and that didn't actually happen. Memories, and then future thinking, otherwise known as imagining the future, which could be practical, like what am I going to make for dinner tomorrow, or it could be a little bit wilder, like, oh, who will I be when I retire? And then also just pure daydreaming, you know, thinking about impossible stuff. Like, you know, yeah, well, what if I had this power to just make everybody like me? That kind of thing. And then thinking about other people. Yeah, well, what did she mean when she said that? And then why was he laughing? Because it wasn't even funny. So what was going on? What was she thinking? And what was he thinking? Were they thinking, was this about me? And so that's what we're doing. We're just like rotating through all these areas that seem to be interconnected. And so they call this the default mode network. When the brain defaults to thinking about the past, ruminating on the past, imagining the future, just sheer wild daydreaming, and thinking about other people. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, does it? Like, does that sound like about four of your Zazen periods today? Because Buddhist meditators have known about this for a long time, for over 2,000 years, but they don't call it the default mode network. They call it monkey mind. And this is the nature of our human minds, to just jump around, and especially in those areas, obsessing about the past, dreaming about the future, going off just to la-la land, and thinking about other people. And this has been recognized, not just in the Buddhist tradition, but in other traditions too. I made a little hobby of studying this. It's kind of interesting. Even if the science is nebulous, it's definitely onto something. And so, you know, so this is what we're going to deal with, because we're sitting on the cushions as human beings, and this is what our brains do. And so we're going to be distracted. And in fact, one of the founding teachers of Boundless Way Zen, the third founding teacher, these two are the other two, David, Melissa, and James Ford. So James Ford, who has moved on to a Soto Zen group to found one, he has a blog called Monkey Mind, Easily Distracted. So James knows too. And we're all easily distracted. And so what did we do? What did we do with these distractions? If we're not going to beat up on ourselves. And yet, if we are going to do that, a gentle version, and it should always be gentle, of that other slogan, you know, about reproach. Because we're not sitting down on the cushion just to go to La La Land. We're here to liberate ourselves. And so what do? When we catch ourselves again and again being distracted, and as opposed to distracting ourselves intentionally, but being distracted. And what we do when we catch ourselves again and again being distracted is that we catch ourselves again and again being distracted. And so the poison is the cure. We catch ourselves, and in that moment of catching, we have a moment of freedom, and we have a moment of noticing, and we have a moment, a little opening, and really the possibility, every one of those moments is the possibility of complete awakening. How do I know that? Sounds pretty hard to believe, because Lin Ji told me. Lin Ji, the founder of the line of Zen that became Rinzai Buddhism in Japan, and that also went to Korea and became one of the three streams coming into our unique school, Boundless Way Zen. And so Lin Ji says, your mind that at each moment is capable of freeing itself from its shackles, everywhere emancipated. That's your mind. That's not some abstract mind he's talking about. That's your mind. So take this personally. That's you. And that's me too. I've got to accept this. Or I'll stay trapped. Your mind that each moment is capable of freeing itself from its shackles, everywhere emancipated. And earlier in that same reading that we did, Do Your Best, he says, would you like to get to know Manjushri? Yeah, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom. I want to be that guy. Sure. Sit at his feet. Your mind that carries out your activities right here and wherever you go, from first to last, beyond doubting. This is the living Manjushri. That easily distracted mind, your mind, this mind that is so miraculous that it keeps us alive no matter how zoned out we get. It keeps us from stepping in front of cars when we're daydreaming crossing the street. It keeps us breathing when we're sleeping. It does miracle after miracle after miracle. And yet somehow we think we need to look someplace else for Manjushri. And somehow we think that because we're so distraction prone that we can't be the Buddha, we can't experience this complete and utmost awakening that Lin Ji is pointing us to. And really all he's saying is, you know, no more excuses right now. So let me end by reading something beautiful from Norman Fisher about this. This is the end of his little discussion of working with distraction. You don't have to be perfect. Sounds like he knows me. You don't have to be on the beam every moment. Discipline isn't like that. And I'm going to skim a little. When you think you're distracted, when you think you've forgotten about your practice, remember this slogan. Practice when you're distracted. You may well be distracted, but there's nothing wrong with that. As soon as you know your state of distraction, you are practicing. You've remembered your practice. Distraction, laziness, indulging in stuck emotions like anger, jealousy, and so on, all part of the practice. You fall, and please, listen to this part. You fall down on the ground, and you use the ground to get up. I read that, and I thought, oh, I wonder who said that. And so I Googled it. And, oh, Norman Fisher said it. It was just, I couldn't believe it. He came up with something that wonderful. So I'm going to sit with that tonight. You fall down on the ground and you use the ground to get up. But I'm not too distracted to remember to.